This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 43. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
I learned something about the financial space, which is working with owners of very large, closely held businesses. I learned that they always get pitched with all sorts of tax stuff, and there's nobody there to really help them. You know, there's a promoter at the one end saying, hey, do this, and you're going to be able to save a bundle of money. And then their accountant is really clueless. Honestly, you'd be shocked. You can have people running companies with hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue, and their accountants are great at doing the taxes for the business. But if they're thrown a curveball, they really don't know what to say. They're kind of caught flat-footed, and they revert to their gut.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt? Invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today our guest is Bernard Reese, and he's the founder and CEO of 401kcheckbook.com and Resure, which supports investors on investments through retirement accounts. Prior to this, Bernard served as director of Cometrics Partners, managing an array of engagements involving financial consulting and due diligence. 401k Checkbook gives investors direct control of tax-favored funds for real estate equity and debt opportunities using checkbook control IRAs, QRPs, solo 401ks, and checkbook life insurance. Delivered with the experience and integrity and accounting for the nuances of your personal tax profile and the tax rules applicable to tax sheltered accounts. Bernard, what a background. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you with us.
Mike, honored to be here. Great. I loved our discussion ahead of the recording and looking forward to the recorded segment as well.
Absolutely. So, hey, I'm going to open this up with the same question I ask everybody when they come on, because we want to know a little bit about you. So if you could tell me about yourself and share your story with us.
Glad to. I have an interesting story, you know, really, really different than what you tend to encounter out there. So I had to work while I was in school. And so I started working at a management consulting firm while I was earning my degree and working towards being a CPA. That gave me an incredible amount of experience, both in a corporate environment and exposure to some pretty incredible stuff. And a lot of the work that came to the consulting firms kind of landed on their doorstep. Oddly enough, made it, you know, I took the lead on that because they were looking for somebody that took initiative, that kind of was able to think out of the box. So anything that didn't fit squarely within what they'd been doing for the last 15 years, it was like, oh, Bernard, you do this. So I got to see lots of interesting stuff on the tax side, due diligence, audit, and I learned something about the financial space, which is working with owners of very large, closely held businesses. I learned that they always get pitched with all sorts of tax stuff, and there's nobody there to really help them. You know, there's a promoter at the one end saying, hey, do this, and you're going to be able to save a bundle of money. And then their accountant is really clueless. Honestly, you'd be shocked. You can have people running companies with hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue, and their accountants are great at doing the taxes for the business. But if they're thrown a curveball, they really don't know what to say. They're kind of caught flat-footed and they revert to their gut. You know, if it doesn't feel right, they say, don't do it. And sometimes they're wrong. You know, there are things on the tax side that investors or business owners should do, even if your accountant is not familiar with it. On the other hand, sometimes they will say, hey, go ahead and do this. Again, but they're missing the real information because they're not experts in that area of the law. So what I learned is that there's a huge gap in the financial industry where you've got essentially salespeople on the one side and nobody on the other side. So that's one thing I learned while I was there. The second thing I learned was that I did not want to be in an environment where I was given a task. Hey, do this. These are the procedures. I realized, you know, I would shoot myself if I submitted myself, if I had to go through that. So oddly, I accepted a job offer initially at PricewaterhouseCoopers, you know, PwC for short, which is, if you're an accounting major, that's like the dream, right? That's the dream. PwC is year after year ranked number one.
That's the spot you want to be.
Exactly. They're ranked year after year. They're always the number one. And I called them up and I said, I'm sorry, I'm not coming. And they did not know what hit them. They're like,
probably did not expect that at all.
They're like, are you going to Deloitte? Are you going to EY? Are you going to KPMG? I was like, no, I'm going to be doing my own thing. So that is something that they had never experienced. And they were astounded. They didn't know how to handle it even. I remember you speak to like to their HR people, and they didn't know how to wrap their heads around this. But it's something that is extremely rewarding. Obviously, you have to be cut out for it. You have to want it. You know, many people were telling me then, hey, go to PwC. Just go there for 2 years. Sit it out. Get it on the resume. And then kind of do your thing. But for me, it wasn't so much about, wasn't only about like, all right, what's the bottom line going to look like? It's more about the environment. I realized I would not feel fulfilled going there and being told, okay, this is what you got to do. I needed to be in a seat where I'm creating and not being dictated to. And that is really what began my journey to all that I do today.
That's a pretty amazing story, especially, you know, when you first got your certification and, you know, the big dogs are reaching out, they want you to come on over. And you said, no, I'm going to kind of do my own thing. And I guess I could understand why they would react that way. So that's for sure. So
it's not so much, well, oddly enough, there were two feelings that one is they just couldn't wrap their hands around it. Never something they'd never seen before. And then secondly, I was surprisingly enough, you almost sensed as if somebody there took it personally. And that was odd, but I would encourage anybody, regardless of what your track is, if you feel you have something unique to offer to the world, embrace it and don't, you can get off that kind of that system. There's a conveyor belt that you get on and you can step off that whenever you think you're ready to step out on your own and forge your own path.
Absolutely. There's something about, you know, your own uniqueness. You know, there's something about every individual that makes you unique, right? It's who we are as people. And it's one of the things I started doing when I started up Average Joe Finances as well myself. It wasn't really something I was sure I can do. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to go for it. I have a mission. I have something I want to do. I'm going to help other people. I'm going to serve others. So I just did it. And so far, it's just been an amazing journey. So when you step out of your comfort zone, and you embrace your uniqueness, you embrace what you have and what you have to offer, you realize that you do have a lot of value to add to other people. So really glad that you did something like that yourself and stepped out, because you've had some amazing success, which we'll talk a little bit about. Okay. First thing I want to ask you though, and this is just following up off of your story. So you were talking about how, you know, a lot of CPAs that are working for these, you know, multi-million, sometimes even multi-billion dollar companies, they're really good with managing the checkbook. They're really good with taxes. But when they get thrown a curveball, the hands go up in the air and they're not really sure what to do. So what makes you different than your typical run-of-the-mill CPA who just, you know, they got their certification, they know how to do taxes, and that's really it?
So here's the real, there are all sorts of assumptions embedded in that question that have to be revisited, right?
For sure.
You get your certification, you know, diddly squat.
Right.
That you really, there's very little that one knows from getting certification. And that's true in almost every industry.
Absolutely. Same thing here as a realtor. So I just got my license not too long ago. I know what I know, and that's what I know.
And I actually put a whole series of posts on LinkedIn about this. Now, before I go ahead and kind of talk about what CPAs know or don't know, what I like about the CPA certification is that it is rigorous. It's not easy to earn the CPA license, right? So at the very least, if somebody has earned, become a CPA, they've proven that they have a certain combination of dedication, intelligence, commitment to see, right? It tells you a lot about the individual, even if they can't do a tax return yet or read tax code, right? In contrast, right? And so there's one group of certifications that fall into that category. CPA is not the only one, right? Passing the California bar exam for an attorney is a similar concept, right? Can they really practice law? I mean, maybe they can or they can't, but the certification doesn't prove it. But it does prove that you've got a certain set of internal traits that are valuable, and you're somebody that I would want to engage with. But then there's a whole slew of certifications that really prove nothing. And at the risk of offending some folks, most of the financial licenses really don't prove much, right? And I can say that only because I have a securities license. I have a PNC license. I have a life, accident, and health license. So I've done all that. So those exams, for the most part, you can prepare for those in a couple of weeks. Or even if you have some back prior information and you're committed, you can do it in a couple of days, theoretically. So those exams, what they test mostly, and I haven't taken the realtor exam. I have picked up the book and taken a look at it, right? Obviously, my familiarity with real estate gives me a kind of head start on that. But a lot of these licenses, the test is just about like the regulations of your industry. I think the realtor exam tests you more on substance a little bit, not just the regulations. But I got to say from the securities licensing, the PNC, life, accident, and health, the bulk of the stuff that they're testing you on is regulations that don't prove anything about your ability to help clients. So that's one thing, you know, an assumption about the certification. So where do you actually learn, right? That's the question. Where do you learn? And most people learn on the job. You come to your desk and you come in as a junior, as an associate, and they tell you, here, do this. And you do that for a couple of years. And then you move up to being a senior, and from there to manager. And so they give you more, then you're a senior, and then you get to tell the juniors, hey, you guys do this, right? You move up to manager, and then you get to tell the seniors, you guys tell the juniors to do this. But it's essentially, and at some point, as you transition from manager to partner in these firms, right, then you take on some of the business function, which is not just the tasks, it's interacting with the clients, right? So you're doing the tax work for a large firm. So you're going to interact directly with the stakeholders at that firm. And when you're actually a partner, you're going to be bringing in new business. But in the learning path is all about the tasks. Nowhere does anybody, most CPAs have never seen tax code. I don't know if that surprised you, but CPAs learn from the tasks, doing the tax returns. There are very few CPAs that actually read code, read regulations, read case law, revenue procedures, chief counsel memorandums. So there's a wealth of tax law going right back to the building blocks that most CPAs never look at. And where I love to live is in that area. It was just going back to the basics. All right, let's trace this from the law that Congress wrote through the regulations, through all the through IRS guidance and the court guidance.
Right on. Yeah, so it's really funny because when you describe it that way, it's very similar to how we do things in the military, right? So we do a lot of on-the-job training, which, you know, especially when you're more junior, you do a lot of the OJT, you learn, you get better at it. Because some of the stuff that they teach you in your initial training, it kind of goes out the window once you actually get out there and start doing the JOB, right? And then, of course, as you get more senior, you're delegating some of those tasks down, learning more as you go until you get up to higher positions of authority. So it's very similar. And I guess I really like the fact that, you know, that you have that same type of structure because it allows. This is just something that stays on my mind, you know, for somebody who's like a transitioning service member that's looking to get into being a CPA or something like that. It's a similar type of world that they can better understand when they get themselves into it. So I think that's really neat. Now,
and I'm curious, is there a parallel though? So on the CPA side, right, there are the tasks that have to get done to get the tax return out the door. Or on the audit side, there are tasks that have to be done. There are procedures. And when you're, especially when you're a big operation, it gets to be repetitive. There are templates for everything. There's even a bit of an acronym in the tax world and the audit world. You know, which procedure we're doing that, you know, what do you do this year? It's called SALY, S-A-L-Y. And SALY is an acronym for same as last year, right?
Okay.
And the new guy on the job, right? He doesn't know necessarily what to, this year, for example, I had to do a consulting engagement, on the tax side for, it was related to tax sheltered accounts, QRPs, investing in real estate. And it was a new question that I hadn't explored yet. So, you know, we break out the tax code, we break out the regulations and we go through it. But this is something that nobody, it's original, kind of appears to be, you know, original research that you're initiating on your own. And you like getting independent confirmation. And so I talked to, have a network of CPAs that I talk to. You know, we network with each other. And on the back end, we work together. And you, after a while, I realized, okay, we're going to have to, I'm going to talk to my folks, my friends at EY, that's Ernst & Young, and PwC, and see what their take is on this. Because I'm reaching some pretty conclusions, you know, the conclusions that people have not heard before. And I want to test this. And I called my, you know, one of my buddies who's a manager at Ernst & Young, EY, you know, and for an industry parlance. And he says to me, Bernard, what you're sharing with me now helps me understand what I'm doing. I have a client that's structured the way, you know, for what you're describing. And I took over this client from the manager that was there ahead of me. And so I know this is how we do it, but I never knew why. And now you're explaining to me based on the tax code why we do it that way. But I never had any idea.
Because they were doing SALY.
Exactly. They're doing SALY. They're doing SALY. They're like, oh, I'm taking over this account. Let's just see the way they did it. Nobody is thinking about how should this be done. And the problem with that methodology is that if you're not really thinking, you miss opportunities. Tax code is a evolving space or always changes. And if you're just doing procedures, you know, some people find that gratifying. Personally, I don't find that fulfilling, but also it's, you're going to miss opportunities for perhaps reduced taxes. And you're also going to miss compliance, which can be really important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I don't really talk too much personally about my job in the military, right? What I do in the Navy, but I actually deal with a lot of pay and personnel issues. And one of the things that we go over is we have these standard operating procedures, SOPs, right? Mm-hmm. So for each transaction that we have, you know, to start certain entitlements for our sailors as they, you know, get here to Hawaii, we need to make sure their basic allowance for housing starts, their cost of living expenses start. You know, we have our standard procedures that we follow. Now, when we have to submit this, it goes up through auditors and it gets reviewed by several people before it finally gets approved and started. And a lot of times these entitlements have to get back paid. It's just really funny to see, you know, similar procedures that we're doing here in the military is also being done out there in the corporate world. So it's really fun to talk about that.
Yeah, no, procedures and, you know, kind of enable you to streamline things. It also creates opportunity depending which area. Obviously, certain things really are well suited to procedures, but certain things, right? If you want to have, if you need, everybody, it may be unique. And if every client comes to you, right? Somebody comes to me, I know, okay, we can really be simple, say, hey, do ABC. But I do know that if you're going to kind of put your thinking cap on and both think about the individual's personal profile and think about the tax code, you're going to create the real ability to do some magical stuff. Rather than if you just follow some sort of SOP, nobody is going to get the optimal outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be personal. And, you know, I wrote that down too, when you're taking into account an individual's personal profile. Sorry, I sit here and take notes because, again, one of the selfish things I do here as a podcast host is learn as much as I can from my guests. So you're getting added to my list of my wealth of knowledge that I'm compiling.
So, okay, honored. And I think there's a contrast there. In the military, right? Again, I don't know what I don't know, which is a huge thing in everything. Everybody's got to be know that you don't know what you don't know. And one of the ways to see, identify that there are unknown unknowns is to look at the areas where I'm an expert, or for you to look at the area where you're an expert. And you can imagine somebody approaching you and saying, hey, Mike, I've got kind of, I know kind of what you do, but I have one question. And you hear that one question and you realize that they're missing the boat, right? They think they know everything and they have one question, but that one question almost that indicates that there's a whole world of information that's an unknown to them. For military, to me, is an unknown, but what I see most often in the tax space is people don't see their unknown unknowns, particularly, with everything, taxes, finances. A place where I live in heavily is the retirement accounts, QRP, SDIRA. The misinformation there is unbelievable. But procedures are great where things really lend themselves well. It's kind of everybody's going to fit into one or two, three boxes and you can set up the rules. But when there's a lot more nuance, then SOPs is going to leave some people in the wrong place.
Right. It's just that blueprint, that standard that you have set to get started. Right. After that, it's on the individual and the person that's, putting in the work and creating the transactions to make it happen. Right.
Exactly.
So I want to kind of rope it back in a little bit to ask you a little bit more about your personal journey right now. So I have a question I want to ask you, and that is, what are you, Bernard, doing personally on your journey to or in financial freedom?
Okay, awesome question. So a key to financial freedom is, different terms we can use: leverage, scale. But if you think about it, you've got to grow beyond yourself. And the question is, how do you do that? Now, on the tech side, you can imagine that's easy, right? You build an app, you build some software, and then you can push it out to the world. And you can have a million users, but you don't need to be in a million places at once, right? So in tech, we understand how scale works. Other areas where you can scale is, you bring in employees, right? And you can theoretically go to the beach and the employees do the work, right? So you can get freedom. So freedom always requires leveraging something, kind of extending yourself. But the question is, how do you do that in the space that you're in? Sometimes you get to scale because you use capital, right? You can take, we take all this capital, be it your own or investors' capital, and you're earning a return. So if you're a syndicator, right? You're earning a carried interest on X amount of capital. Again, you're getting that leverage, that scale, because you're leveraging something that's bigger than yourself, or you're putting yourself, your tools and talents, into something that's bigger than yourself. Now, I'll use the retirement account space as an example, because it's a great, great example of how things work. Self-directed retirement accounts are plagued by misinformation and incomplete information. And why is that? Why is the industry, this is a real challenge facing the industry. So it's a niche space of taxation and tax compliance. And there are a handful of people in the country that are real experts in it, real experts, right? And now, not every one of that, and again, I should emphasize, not every self-proclaimed expert is an expert. But there are real experts, and then there are some, folks that are not experts, but they're, experts perhaps at marketing, but not in self-directed retirement accounts. So these experts, they have a choice, right? They can operate more like a professional service business, but a professional services, there's no scale. Unless you want to water down the product and you hire somebody else that's not the same expert that you are to deliver the services, right? And this is what PwC and all these companies have done, really, right? They've say, hey, right, we're going to hire people that have a basic level of competence and get them to do the tasks, right? But it's really a big machine that just has people in it instead of robots, right? That's really what it is. And it's systematizing it. And it's by design. You're not trusting and you're not having your juniors, seniors, and most of the folks in that chain do work that requires thinking. They're essentially performing a well-defined function. So that's a way to get scale, but that means you're watering down your service. So if you, what has happened to self-directed retirement space is, for the most part, the handful of people that have real expertise have gone out and started self-directed IRA custodian companies. And now custodian companies actually don't deliver expertise. They deliver paper processing. They deliver administrative processing. Now they have staff, folks on staff that are know enough to be dangerous, but they have gone from delivering expertise to really delivering paperwork. And as a marketing tool, they'll share some of that expertise, but they're not in the business of providing expertise. They're in the business of getting your money onto their platform, earning money on your money, earning transaction fees, but you're never going to talk to the real expert, right? So how do you scale that, right? That's one way scale goes. But the folks that have done that have foregone some personal fulfillment because they're no longer in the business of helping people, right? They started a business where they hire people to process paperwork. And that have what that was, what that has led to is, for the most part in this space today, almost every company is in the business of just selling paperwork. Whether they're saying QRP, whether they're saying SDIRA, whether they're saying solo 401k, they are just selling paperwork. Now, some of these companies have a real expert somewhere on staff, which you're never going to talk to. And then that led to copycats, folks saying, hey, you don't have to be an, if the expert went ahead and started a business where they process paperwork, but he's not providing expertise, then I can start a business, where we just sell the paperwork and you don't have to be an expert anyway. We're not selling expertise. This whole business is just about getting people signed up for an account, taking their money, making them feel good that you can invest in real estate with your retirement account and moving on. So this is what the space looks like and something that I've been grappling with, right? And the honest truth is, this is to be really honest, I don't have a completely formulated answer to this, is I don't want to move away from being your guide, from just giving paperwork. What Resure does that's unique is we help people, we tell them, really, really educate them. We spend hours with each client educating them about the pros and cons. And of course, they get the paperwork as well, but it's not a one size fits all. And they'll hear about all the pitfalls and they'll hear about smarter ways to do things. Now, how do you scale that? That is really the question you're asking me, right? More or less, I've refined your question. How do you scale this? Do you come to another company that says, hey, we're marketing the XABC account that is the best account that you've never heard of and you can get total control of your money and here's your paperwork? Or do we become some company that, again, it says, how do we do that? I have a couple of thoughts, but actually being that it's something that's on my mind, I would welcome your feedback because I'm willing to learn from anybody.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, when it comes to what you're doing in the CPA realm, I am by no means an expert at all, right? So I guess for me, it's more of, and I think where you were going with this too, it's more about having that personal individuality, that personal touch to the services you're providing versus it just being a paper trail where, you know, you come in, you sign up for one of our products, we'll review it, get all your stuff taken care of, get you out the door, here's the return you're going to get, boom, boom, it's all over. Whereas I think what you're saying is, you know, you're trying to scale the more personal, hey, let's sit down, have a chat and explain why by you filling out this paperwork, you're going to sit here and this is the type of return you're going to get, you know, based on this product. And here's why, let me go through it with you instead of just the typical, we're going to get you signed up, get you out the door so we can move on to the next client type deal. Is that kind of like what you're talking about?
It goes beyond that. That's definitely part of it. But keep using examples from the self-directed space. I encounter people all the time that, you know, get in touch with me and they're like, oh, I have a QRP, but I have this question. Right. And I'll discover from after only 30 seconds of talking to them that they either should not have this kind of account that they've got, right? Or they've done all sorts of stuff they should not have done. And why is that? That's because they signed up with a service that doesn't really care to work with them based on their tax profile and really educate them.
Right.
They just want to sell them the paperwork. They make their money in the paperwork, and actually educating, oddly enough, educating gets in the way of sales for these companies, right? Because if you start talking about, oh, you got to know, by the way, there's this compliance thing you got to be aware of, people may not buy, right? And they're there to sell the paperwork. They just need you to sign up for the paperwork. They don't really care beyond that whether or not it's the right paperwork for you, as long as they can defend themselves and say, oh, listen, they didn't give us any red flags that said, hey, I don't qualify for this paperwork, or they feel protected and they'll sell it to you.
I think this kind of circles back to one of the first questions I asked you about what makes what you're doing, you know, that much more different than, you know, the typical CPA or accountant that's doing this type of work, right? And I think that's one of the distinct differences right there is, again, adding that personal touch, adding in the actual care for the client, not just, I want to push you through, get the numbers done and get you out the door. It's more of a, hey, we're actually here to help you and assist you through this process. Have you actually know and educate you on the program that you're going into? And I think that's, you know, a big thing that I have found with a lot of people that I've interviewed, no matter what their expertise is, when you come in here and you're looking at a product, or whether it's something you want to invest in real estate, you want to get into your first syndication, or you want to buy your first rental property. The number one thing you need to do before you do anything, before you drop any money on a down payment or earnest money or anything like that, is you want to educate yourself. You want to know what it is that you're getting into. You want to know what the program is that you're getting into. So I can tell just by the way that you're talking about this and how passionate you are about this is you genuinely care about your clients that are coming in and looking to get these products from you, whether it's self-directed IRA or a QRP, or, you know, even what you were talking about before with life insurance too, right? So it's, you're adding more of that personal touch, and it's really refreshing actually that you're showing more of a genuine care and respect for the clients that you're taking on versus them just being another number to you. You know?
Yes, I love that. And that kind of comes full circle to the question, how do you scale that
right,
without diluting it or without sacrificing what you really want to do, right? If all you want to do is, if you want to maintain that, how do you scale that? That is the challenge that faces anybody that aims to do that.
Well, and I think that goes to building your team, right? The people that you bring on that are going to help you with this, that help you grow and scale, have to understand what your mission statement is, you know, what it is you're trying to do, and that the focus is going to always be on helping the clients. And you know, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm kind of swaying off the line here, but I think that's kind of where you're at and where you're going with this, right? It's the people that you're building your team with have to be focused on your mission and the company's mission of serving and helping others.
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors.
Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Mike Cav with Average Joe Finances. You know, we're living in some pretty tough times right now. And if you don't have life insurance, you should probably get it. You need to protect yourself, protect your family, and protect what you own. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description.
What's going on, everybody? So I am happy to announce that we now have our video and audio editing services live. So whether you're starting a brand new YouTube channel or a podcast, or you're already established, we have services that'll fit your needs. Go check it out, www.averagejoefinances.com/services, and you can see all the services that we have to offer, including our newest audio and video editing.
Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
I think that's part of it. But I think, you know, the direction that we've taken is more about leveraging technology. So technology right. enables us to have a more, right, that one-on-one discussion. We can, you know, if when you kind of go the pure team route, there are very few people that have the expertise needed to really help people that way. Your heart can be in the right place, and that's the key, right? But you also need the technical side. So you need both of them. So a lot of it is also about using technology to have actually me personally work with groups and being able to kind of download that knowledge.
Right.
So that you don't have to be there either working one-on-one or to a lot of the knowledge can be in a repository where people can actually easily find exactly what they're looking for. But of course, we always give clients access to a portal. They can ask their questions 24/7. But we try to have as much of the info available in an easily navigable form because we know what the FAQ are. And more than the FAQ is the FAQ, a lot of it you can find on the internet. What's missing is the SAQ. Have you ever heard SAQ before?
No, I definitely heard of FAQ before, but
the SAQ are the ones they don't want you to know about. The SAQ are the should ask questions.
I like it.
Absolutely. Right? It's the unknown unknowns. It's the stuff that they're trying to keep you from even realizing that you should be asking, right? So anytime today, everybody knows the internet information is ubiquitous. So even the folks that are not giving you the full information, they're not saying nothing. They're providing incomplete information, right? And so you have the impression that, hey, I've got all this information, right? Now that information, oddly enough, is not given only to help you. It's actually almost given a sense as a decoy, right? Because now you're not thinking about what else is there. It's like, oh, here's the info. So the biggest thing that we're helping people with is the should ask questions. The questions that have incomplete info out on the web or where providers are giving incomplete information, what we're giving them is the should ask questions.
Right on. Yeah, I love that. And to tell you the truth, I'm really surprised that I didn't even bring up tech because that is one of the things that I talk about often on this channel too, with, you know, just what we have today, you know, in technology wise with Zoom, right. To, you know, allow me to have a conversation with you when we're thousands of miles apart and we could sit here and have this conversation in real time, looking at each other face to face, pretty much, you know, it still has more of a personal touch. Right. And then, you know, you're talking about how you're able to build a repository and have all this information available for your clients. And it's still, you know, coming from you, right, as the expert in that area. And they're not just getting shuffled around to different people, you know. So, yeah, a little bit different than where I was going with the whole, you know, hiring your team thing. This definitely allows you to have a large scalability because you can take on more clientele that way. Thanks to the technology that you have in your pocket, right? So
yeah, absolutely. And it's obviously a blend of the two. But what technology creates that didn't exist, right? So when you talk about the way any other company is structured, in a sense, they're dinosaurs. They were structured for an era where somebody, most of these firms, right, that start with a real expert, they sacrificed that mission for growth. And they had to. Because the technology was not there. And so they almost, in order to scale, they gave up perhaps the founder's mission. You know, he had a mission both from his personal expertise and his mission to help in order to scale and create things that are strictly process-based. And technology enables us to push out and each individual can scale themselves out exponentially using tech.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, perfect example, like, you know, 20 years ago, if somebody wanted to go see their expert, right, to do that, you know, to work on their taxes, go see their accountant, you know, to buy certain products, they would have to get in their car, drive however far to get to the office, go in, sit down, go over the products. And the person would have to be somewhere in the local area. Where fast forward to where we are today in 2021, you know, if I wanted to use you, and I'm in Hawaii, I don't have to hop on a plane and fly out there to come see you. We could hop on a Zoom call or we could schedule something, you know, and share screens and do things that way. And or I could just go onto the repository and learn about the specific thing I wanted to learn about. So, you know, it's really, we've come a really long way from where we were just 20 years ago, right? And it's amazing what people can do now with the disposal that they have in their hands. Not only from, you know, I'm talking to you right now through a computer system and webcam and everything like that, but I mean, this thing right here is so powerful that, and people don't even realize it. Sometimes you can get lost on this thing here, but there is so much that you can do with something that you have in your pocket, something so powerful that you just carry around with you every day. And that's your cell phone, right? Totally, totally went off the script here, but I think this is
awesome. I didn't know there was a script.
No, not script. I have set questions here that I like to ask you. So,
I'll throw something in that I think you'll find amusing, right? Ironically, right? I'm in New York City. And the way we built ourselves, we work with clients worldwide. We have clients in Hawaii. I don't know. Some of them are sticklers for that. They're like, no, Hawaii. I don't know.
You got to make sure you have that apostrophe in there.
Yeah.
And if you want to really get technical, the W's here are actually pronounced as a V. So it's Hawaii.
Hawaii. Yeah. Okay. I'll bear that in mind. But so what was happening is though, folks from New York would reach out. And they're like, okay, so when do I schedule an appointment to come to the office? And we'd say, you know, we're optimizing ourselves to work with clients nationally. And that's much more efficient, much more effective. You coming into the office doesn't help us, doesn't help you, right? So, and they're like scratching their heads. What has happened with COVID a bit is folks have realized that we can work remotely. So whereas till now, the local clients were saying, hey, insisting on coming in, and we try to tell them, hey, we work with the people in Hawaii and they don't have to come in. There's no need for you to come in. And COVID has actually, in a certain sense, if there is a silver lining in COVID, it's, you know, for the those of us that have been kind of ahead of the curve on the remote thing, it has kind of brought the rest of the world in sync with us.
Right. It's actually pushed us to try to catch up with where we should be, you know, technology wise, right? You see it all the time. For the longest time, we've had Skype, right? Where you could sit here and video chat people one-on-one like that. They're the OGs, right? They're the ones that have been around the longest, right? Then you have Facebook Messenger. You have all these other programs where you can do not face-to-face, but video chats with people. I mean, one of the things that I've really enjoyed about Zoom is, you know, around the holidays, especially being out here in Hawaii, is that most of my family's back in New York, right? Because that's where I'm from originally too. So
no way, you're from New York?
Yeah, I'm from Long Island. So, but yeah, so to be able to hop on a Zoom call, you know, during the holidays and be able to see pretty much all my family is pretty amazing. And I don't have to sit here and buy $1,000 ticket to fly back to New York and see them. You know, a lot of times it is nice to get that personal, you know, in person feeling as well, and have some of my aunt's cooking, but you know, right now you got to take what you can get, and I just enjoy the fact that technology has allowed this, has allowed families to remain close even, you know, during something like this pandemic that we're dealing with now. And I wouldn't want to go visit some of my older family members right now with what's going on, just because the risk that might impose if they were sick. I mean, I'm vaccinated and everything, but I just, you know, right now is just probably not the right time to get back to normal. But I think we're getting there. I think it's going to happen hopefully soon. But you know, that's just me. I'm not a politician or a scientist or a doctor, so I'll let them do.
It's pretty cool how you say how politician was the first one mentioned in that sentence.
Well,
and it should be the last.
I'm being realistic here too. So yeah,
I get that
politics have
reality.
A lot to do with that. Yeah. Unfortunately. So, hey, again, because I love doing these interviews this way because it's interactive. It's like, you know, just the two of us sitting down, having a cup of coffee and just having a chat. Right. And if you don't drink
coffee?
Then tea.
I came prepared.
I already had a couple cups this morning. I'm drinking water now. So, there's a question I want to ask you, especially with you being a retirement account guy, right? And this is more personal for me, as well as I know some of my other listeners would appreciate this as well, because I know a lot of them have done this. Now, what is your personal take on somebody who is thinking about taking out a loan against their 401k or retirement accounts to invest in other assets, say maybe to invest into a syndication or to buy a rental property?
Yeah, awesome question. And by now you'll know that there's no one size fits all answer, right? There is no one size fits all response.
Right.
So the part as part of kind of the decision tree here, right? I can't capture everything, but let's hit some basic stuff, right? The first thing you want to explore is, firstly, do they have the option of doing it within a retirement account, right? So that's the first thing we want to explore. So your military, they've got a TSP, right? So if they're in a position to get the funds out of the TSP, maybe they've just left the military, then they have the ability to actually move that over to a QRP, 401k, or IRA, some structure, right? That's one aspect of the discussion. But for purpose of the question you're asking, the assumption is that that doesn't exist, right? They're active military, TSP is locked up, they can get a loan though, right? That's right, the correct. Kind of the given, that's one of the givens in the question.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, is borrowing against one of your retirement accounts.
Yes. Now, the second aspect of this is going to be, right, what we're looking for in any decision is gauging your ROI, trying to put a number on it, right? And ROI sometimes is a number, sometimes it's a lot more than a number, right? So the starting point is, all right, you're looking at a particular deal, all right, you have a pro forma. Now, anybody that's a sophisticated and savvy investor knows pro formas should be taken with a grain of salt.
Absolutely.
Or a lump.
A couple tablespoons.
Now, the deal can outperform the pro formas. That's less likely, but it has. I've seen that happen, right? It can underperform. But you're looking for, say, okay, let's come up with a range of how this deal is going to perform, a realistic range, right? I've seen deals that have outperformed. Usually the outperformance has come because there's been some sort of unexpected appreciation, right? That's what I've seen. I've never seen like, hey, the rents go up way higher than the pro formas, but I've seen like, hey, somehow the area picked up, became a hot area, and going on the exit, they're able to sell for so much more or at a much lower cap rate. So let's come up with the dollars and cents ROI and associate some sort of risk factor with it, right? You need to think about the risk adjusted return. Then we've got to say, okay, is there any ROI here that's kind of an intangible ROI? So if you're a guy that's saying, all right, listen, I'm lifetime military. I'm never doing real estate full time. This is the only real estate I'm going to do. Then the analysis stops here. But for many folks, this is really their kind of initial foray into a longer term pursuit, right? You got to get into the real estate somehow. And where is your entry point? Right. And there are different entry points. Some people, the entry point is, all right, you flip a single family. Right. And some people, it's starting with syndication. Some people want to go straight to syndicating. Right. They're going to go straight to that level. And the way to get in is to do it once yourself, see what it looks like as an investor, then maybe hook up with an operator or a syndicator and offer. So, in that kind of sense, the ROI, potential ROI, goes way, way, way beyond what you can put on a spreadsheet.
Right. Because you're talking about not just your ROI in that particular investment. You're starting off something much larger.
Exactly. So when you have that aspect of it, right, that totally reframes the analysis. Right. So whereas you may be looking at this as, you know, if you're going to ask your traditional accountant, they're going to say, okay, you have this deal, it's going to do this. And your accountant may not have this thought process at all, but the accountant mentality, if they know how to think about these things, right? But they're going to be missing a big piece of it, but they're going to take the spreadsheet out. They're going to say, all right, this deal pro forma says you're going to have a 10% annualized return. But we know you may get a 5% annualized return. You may get a 12, right? So we got to think about that. And now you're going to have a loan that you have to repay off over the next 5 years, and you got to come up with those payments. Right now, is the deal going to throw off the cash flow that you need to pay off the loan? Right, that's number one. Now you're paying interest. These loans are not free to an extent. You have to come with the cash for the interest, and you're also, to an extent, you're giving up returns that you could have inside of the TSP. Right, so there's a delta there. Right, if you assume that TSP is going to give you 7% and this is 10%, but this might be a 5%, it's not so exciting. Ironically.
Right.
right? Of course, if it works out in hindsight, it's great. Wow, I got a 15% annualized return. You know, we got a 20% IRR and I crushed TSP, right? In hindsight, that works well. But prospectively, you never really know. But when you bring in this other aspect of it, which is like, hey, we're launching a career essentially, you know, then it makes a lot of sense. You got to start somewhere. And it's almost getting a free education, because almost you can be pretty sure that in a worst case scenario, it's going to net out, right? Even if the TSP would have gotten this and with the interest, right? And let's say it nets out to a wash, you got a free education.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So it's funny because I did it myself, right? I did borrow against my TSP to buy a duplex, and my cash on cash ROI was upwards of 20%, right? But when I looked at what I did with my TSP that year, my TSP was 21%.
Yes.
So just because I was, you know, I played pretty risky. I kept my stuff in like CNS funds. So it was, but yeah, I looked back and I'm like, I could have left it in and probably would have made the same amount of money. But now at the same time, the cash I was making on my ROI with the rental property, now this was liquid money that I can use towards something else. So that's kind of the way I looked at it, which, you know, all good. Was able to pay back the loan, no problem. So
yeah. And the other thing is,
and it was a small amount. It was just for part of the down payment. So
yeah, no, TSP, let's say that 21% though, right? It's in stocks. It's an unrealized gain.
Right.
Right. So we don't really know where that's going to go. But your real estate deal, I don't know where you're at in the life cycle of the deal, but you're getting cash from that. Like it's another, not just that you're getting cash in the sense that you can use it for personal needs, it's producing real money. Whereas the TSP, all right, S&P 500 or the bucket that you're in jumped up, tomorrow may fall. And so that 21% is not such a meaningful number, but in real estate, you put the cash in your pocket.
Just because I got that, I closed out the year making 21% that year doesn't mean that 2021 is going to close out the same way. It could be 16, it could be 2, you know,
it depends. Backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Can even be negative. So at least with the real estate deal, it's consistently bringing in a cash flow. So, okay. Definitely appreciate that perspective on it. Cause I really thought a retirement funds guy, you're going to be like, naughty, naughty, don't do that. So no, it's refreshing that you look at it from that perspective. And, cause I've had other people telling me like, oh, you shouldn't pull anything out of there. You shouldn't take a loan against it. And, you know, when I tried to explain to them, like show them the numbers, hey, this is why I'm doing it and this is why it works. They're like, no, you should just leave it alone. Don't touch it. Get that money somewhere else. I'm like, but it's my money and I have it right here and I can use it right now. So yeah, it's okay. So I just want to say thank you. Definitely refreshing to hear you say it that way.
Yeah, I think that's an honest perspective that comes from being unbiased. The trouble with the financial industry is that kind of from the top down, there's bias and it gets pushed down all the way. And then folks on the street are kind of fed this information from the financial industry. And I got to say, listen, I help people use primarily, right? I'm helping people use retirement accounts for real estate, right? People that have companies, employees, we're setting up their retirement accounts so they can put the company 401k into real estate, or if it's a solo 401k, QRP, whatever it is, that's the space that I'm in. And it brings a completely different outlook. I'm terribly disappointed when I see what the financial industry, the 401k, TSP, by the way, is in a way a better program than many corporate 401ks. It's not as riddled with fees as these corporate 401ks are.
Right. Yeah. Very, very low fees. Very low.
These corporate 401ks, you've got like a whole team of service providers involved in every plan. And it just destroys the returns. Those costs that are built in that the participants don't see. So they're just there to kind of, hey, create this slush fund where they can pull out their 2-3% per year. So I'm all about people taking control and owning it rather than paying fees and not really getting much value in exchange.
I like it, Bernard. I really do appreciate that. So, okay, I have one more question for you. And this is a big one. This is a really important one. All right. And that is, where can people find more information about you? Do you have a website or social media you'd like to share with us today?
Glad to. Ironically, rather than providing a specific URL, if people Google Bernard Reis, that's BERNARDREISZ, Bernard Reis CPA, you'll find all sorts of stuff. And that's, you can check out Resure Financial, Google Resure, that's R-E-S-U-R-E Financial. And you can find us. Our URLs are 401kcheckbook.com, agentfinancial.com, and resurefinancial.com.
Awesome. I'll make sure I have those links in there as well. So if people are feeling lazy and they don't want to Google it, they could just click away.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Hey, absolute pleasure having you on, Bernard. The conversation was fantastic. You know, again, like I said, I don't really have a script. I just have some like set questions I like to ask, but I really enjoy when I get to sit down with a guest and kind of move away from that and just go back and forth with just a great conversation. And again, like I said, like two of us sitting down, having a cup of coffee, that's what it truly felt like today, even though I'm drinking water and you're drinking, it looked like iced coffee. And, you know, I got to say, I am jealous. And I know it's the last guy I had on from New York said the same thing. Why are you jealous of me? You're in Hawaii. I am jealous of you being in New York right now, because some of the things I miss the most are a nice, you know, bagel and pizza. So those are like the two things I miss the most right now from New York for sure. So I there's a little bit of jealousy there.
I got to ship you something. One day we'll be able to hand it over like through Zoom, give you a bagel
yeah.
with cream cheese. How do you like your bagel?
Yeah, fantastic. I usually just get an everything bagel toast with butter, or I'll get an egg sandwich. Yeah, I miss it. But anyway, hey, Bernard, absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on with us today.
Mike, thanks so much for having me. An honor and a pleasure. And I love the conversation.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment making decision.